Welcome once again to Word on the Hills, with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Sidnell-Reed. This is another in our four-part series to celebrate Poetry Month in April. As usual, we will visit with a local author, poet, playwright, get a glimpse into their lives, what prompts them to write perhaps, and have an opportunity to hear them read. And today we're very pleased to welcome Coburg poet and promoter of poetry par excellence, James Pickersgill. Welcome, James.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
James has been writing poetry for most of his life, and since coming to Coburg has been involved with several organizations dedicated to encouraging poets, providing support and opportunities for their work to be put before the public, and promoting poetry in the community generally. James, when did you first begin writing poetry?
Oh, I've told this story 100,000 times at readings, but really it was at a certain moment in my life when I was 14 years old. I was in grade 9, and at the beginning of the school year, our English teacher walked in. I learned to love him, but I hated him at first. And he said, one of the second or third sentences out of his mouth was, "This year, all of you sitting here are going to write 3 poems." And I put up my hand because I was kind of a smart aleck. And I said, "Sir, you realize that a school year is only 9 months long, not 12 months long, right?" And he said, "Don't worry about it. Sit down. You'll write 3 poems." And I started writing poems, and other people in my family wrote some poetry, my father, my brother. And it just immediately came to me. As soon as I started trying to write, I thought, oh, I've got a voice, I've got a beat, I can have this expression of my creativity that I haven't found before. And by the end of the school year, I had written 300 poems.
Wow. And is that your usual product?
I haven't kept up that productivity, but I say to people, oh, I've written thousands of poems. And I say, but the next question is, how many good ones have you written? And now we get down to single digits, you know.
I'm sure that's not the case. So how do you go about creating your poems?
Well, for me, it usually starts with some sort of single phrase. Like I'll hear somebody say something, hear something on the radio, eavesdropping on a conversation in a coffee shop or something, and it'll turn in my mind. I'll think, oh, that would become a really funny phrase. And then that churns around in my brain for a while. I usually write my poetry in my head for a few days, sometimes weeks, and then I'll begin to flesh it out into a full poem. And then I used to sit down with a pen and paper. I sometimes still do that, but not very often. Most of the time I sit down at a keyboard and start just typing it out. I've got a very visual brain for words on a page, so to me it's always an image of what the word will look like when it's on a page, and I actually see the lines broken up and where they should be placed and that kind of thing, which other poets that I've talked to don't seem to have. It seems to be a fairly rare phenomenon. A lot of poets see color or image, or I see words on a page. So usually when I type it out, it comes out exactly like the image I had in my mind. Some things I think, I sort of have a general rule that a mentor of mine taught me years and years ago to not show any poem I write for at least 3 months. And so that gives me the freedom of rewriting it, leaving it alone for 2 or 3 weeks, coming back to it, reading it with a fresh eye and saying, no, that's not really good. I should reorganize this, rewrite that, take these 3 lines that are at the bottom and put them at the top because that's where they belong, all that kind of stuff. So, that's generally how I write.
That's interesting that you see the words on the page. Does that mean your poetry is more poetry to be read rather than listened to?
Yeah, that's one of my big drawbacks. But it makes it hard at a public reading or something, because a lot of my poetry really works on the page. Quite a bit of it works when read out loud, but even then, I'm reading it and I'm laughing because there's little hidden jokes in there, like wordplay or homonyms and that kind of stuff that you see when you're reading it, but you don't hear when you're listening. And
so. But you have said over the years that 80% of the poems you've written have been love poems.
Yes.
Do you write about other topics, or is that a favorite for you?
Well, you see, that's not really significant if you understand math, because 80% of 10,000 is a lot of poems, right?
Wow.
So 20% of 10,000 is still a lot of poems. Yeah, I write a lot of poems about things other than love, but in the last 30 years, most of the poetry I write is love poetry, and it's all about my wife. Yeah. So.
Oh, what a wonderful testament to her.
Yeah.
What about the average person? Do you think they care about poetry? Do you think they should?
I think they should, but I don't think they do. Not as much as I'd like. Like, I think a lot of people think of poetry of, it's that thing that that boring teacher made me do in high school or in grade school. I had to recite, I had to memorize, I had to read Shakespeare, and I didn't understand how to read Shakespeare. He put John Milton in front of me. Who the heck is John Milton? All that kind of stuff. And I felt the same way. Like, when all those people were put in front of me, I thought, this is meaningless to me when I was young. But then some stuff happened that I found very meaningful. Somebody showed me E.E. Cummings. Somebody showed me the Beat Poets. I thought, oh, this is real to me. I get it now. It's genuine. And then later I could go back to those other people. So I think we do an open mic series, and it has a really interesting effect on people because they come because they think it's a lower level of poetry, like it's an entry level. My friend will be reading and I can hear her read, or I'll try out one or two of my poems that I've never read in public before. And they find it such a welcoming atmosphere that they get really energized by it. A lot of people come experimentally, like they say, well, I'll come to see if it's any good, and the second time I'll read. And it's quite a common experience for us, for them to say that at the beginning of the evening, and by the end of the evening saying, no, I'll go up to the microphone, I'd like to read my stuff. So there's something in that hour or hour and a half that changes their minds. So you can, a lot of modern stuff that's happening with poetry really grabs people's attention. A lot of this spoken word stuff, very jazzy, Ted Ampson stuff, I think really is highly accessible and really captures people's imagination because he talks in such an everyday language, but he puts such a sort of a hipster, jazzy kind of rhythm to it. And people just go, oh, you know, he has this poem about ninjas, and he performs it, and he actually does ninja moves while he's doing it. And people go, oh, that's not like the Shakespeare that English teacher was ramming down my throat in grade 10. You know.
Well, if I were one of those people who had it rammed down my throat in grade 10 and thought never again, what would you suggest I do to re-explore?
Come to an open mic. that would be one thing. Often when you hear poetry, and I always say poetry has a totally different effect than prose, because prose you process intellectually. But poetry, you process emotionally. The best poetry in the world bypasses your intellect and speaks directly to your emotions. So when people have to experience that to understand it. And quite often when people are at a poetry reading for the first time and they talk to me about it afterwards, they say, I've never had an experience like this before. They'll actually ask me, what just happened? And they're saying, what happened inside me? How did that touch me? Because I know it did, but I don't know how it did. And you sort of say, well, yeah, that's the craft of it, isn't it? That's our secret magic, is we put something in there. We know how to touch your emotions, but we don't reveal to you that we know that we're doing it on purpose, we're doing it deliberately. That's part of it. You have to experience it. Then, you know, once you experience it that way, you'll experience reading it. You'll want to recapture that feeling. And then you'll begin to say, I should start trying to write some of this. That could be my form of creative expression. And I think that's sort of how a lot of people access it in my experience. So go to a poetry event and just sit there and just experience it. And you'll find it opens something inside you that doesn't get opened by watching TV. It doesn't get opened by listening to the radio. It doesn't get opened by reading a novel. It doesn't get opened by reading a boring report at work. Yeah. It's a different kind of writing.
Well, perhaps you can give us just a taste of that experience by reading us some of your work.
Sure. You mentioned that a lot of my poems are love poems. So I'll read you one that a lot of people I know who hear my poetry say this is one they really like, and it's a poem I wrote for my wife, Jane. Our want is classic. We are summer's ambrosia. We want the music. I enjoy your eyes. You sing my revelation. You sing me first prize. I enjoy your creation. You are my avocation. I know none like this. I know fascination. You are my dawn kiss. I dig this dream choice. You hear my meditation. You hear my true voice. I dig this combination. You dance with inspiration. I bask in your heat. I bask in stimulation. You dance to my beat. I like this mind blur. You want my admiration. Your wants a murmur. I like this celebration. So that's a poem from my wife, Jane. But I usually write a New Year's poem, and I've been doing that as a habit for a lot of years. I like New Year's. It's got all that spirit of something new, something refreshed, that seems to lend itself to poetry. So this is a New Year's poem I wrote not at the beginning of 2014. I think this is the one I wrote at the beginning of 2013. It doesn't have a title. Most of my poems don't have titles. Day breaks in but a moment, but in that moment we know sunrise. We know sunrise even before this threshold fully knows itself, not even across a minute. Not even across a minute, but containing the reflection of all time, a reflection of more time. All elements in you come to me across fugitive seconds. Across fugitive seconds not yet dawn, there is a capture, all colors potential. All colors complexion, the rush, this blush, brings its quiet and inviting mystery here. Inviting mystery here, Aurora will not tell us all that can be told by omniscient bends of first light, but first light causes us to know still. We like this pink tinge. We are going to like it all.
Thank you, James. And now I think we'll take a short break.